Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, do me a quick favor. If you're near another person right now, take a look at the expression on his or her face. Can you tell what they're feeling? Happiness or surprise, maybe? Or fear, disgust, anger? Hopefully not any of those if they happen to be looking right back at you. But the point is, we're pretty good at reading expressions because emotions are universal. Or so it's thought. That assumption is based on a half-century-old theory from a psychologist named Paul Ekman. His work set out to prove that every human being expresses emotions in the same way, regardless of gender, age, race, culture, that emotions are basic biological processes. Now, Ekman's work is considered some of the most important in the field of emotion science in the past 100 years. It's the basis for a vast, well-funded industry built on studying facial expressions, taught to everyone from the FBI and the TSA to marketing executives and counterterrorism agents. And yet, they might all be wrong. In fact, there's a profound paradigm-shifting debate going on in psychology right now. And my guest today is at the center of it, the leading voice challenging the Ekman hypothesis, the fundamental assumption on which emotion science is based. Lisa Barrett is a professor of psychology at Northeastern University, and Boston Magazine wrote a recent article about her and concluded that if Barrett is right, that, quote, we'll need to rethink how we interpret mental illness, how we understand the mind and self, and even what psychology as a whole should become in the 21st century. Lisa Barrett joins me now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Meghna.
It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's first of all start with a basic explanation, if you could, of Paul Ekman's defining work, since this entire field rests on that. Describe to us what he did in the field and what he discovered.
So Paul Ekman's view was really based on a book that was written by Darwin after On the Origin of Species. It's a very famous book called The Expression of Emotion in Man and Animals. And what in that book, the claim is that all humans everywhere in the world make exactly the same expressions when they are feeling emotion. So you scowl when you're angry, you smile when you're happy, and so on. And so Paul Ekman took posed expressions of face, people posing emotional expressions.
Photographs.
And he took photographs, and he took them to various parts of the world.
And I'm seeing from Japan to Brazil to villages in Papua New Guinea.
Exactly. Actually, the studies in Papua New Guinea are probably the most important because those people at that time had very little access to Western cultural values and practices. So they were really unaware of what Americans would see in those faces.
So he showed people wherever he went these photographs, and then what did he ask them?
Yeah, so he would show them one photograph, and then he would give them a list of translated emotion words, and he would say, pick the word that matches the face.
Oh, okay.
Or he would tell them a story that included an emotion word, you're running from a lion, and you're feeling fear. Right. And then he would present a couple of faces and say, pick which face matches that story. So when people do this, you see them perceive emotion in exactly the same way or very similar ways to American subjects.
So basically what he found was wherever he went, that people were looking at what we would see as a happy face and saying, that's a happy face. What we would see as a sad face saying, that's a sad face.
Exactly.
Therefore, the universality.
Exactly. And then hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies were done, I'm not exaggerating, using this method, which we call a forced choice method, because you're presenting a face and then a set of words and people choose the word that matches the face. Or alternatively, you know, you give people the word or a story with the word in it, and then you give them a couple of faces, right, or maybe even vocalizations like sighs or grunts or growls.
Let me just say it again this way. Forgive me, but I want to underscore how important his original research was, because, as you said, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies, basically verified using the same methodology what Ekman found. This industry/field of research of emotion science sprang up from it. And as we hinted earlier in the conversation, you know, lots of, it's used in so many other fields.
Yes.
You know, everything from what TSA agents are trained to look for in people who come to the airport to, I don't know, ad agencies who want to get us to buy stuff.
Yes, it's taught on Sesame Street. It appears in virtually every introductory psychology textbook in the Western world. It's considered one of the key facts of how the mind works.
Okay, so yet here you come along in your research and you say, I think this is wrong.
Well, we didn't start off that way, I have to say. You know, when you conduct a study and it doesn't work out the way you expect, your first assumption is that you did something wrong. And I had many, many studies when I was a graduate student that didn't work, and I pretty much had concluded that I wasn't really cut out to be a scientist because, you know, my studies weren't replicating other people's studies. And it was really, you know, that's what advisors are for. They
Right.
encourage you. So, what we discovered when we did a really careful review of the literature is that all the studies seem to use this method where they introduce conceptual knowledge about emotion, words, stories, into the task. And when you remove that information, in American undergraduate subjects, you don't see the universal, the presumed universal response. So when you present, for example, instead of presenting a scowling face and a set of words, you just present a scowling face and you say to the subject, please tell me what this person is feeling. They often don't say anger. In fact, very frequently they don't say anger. Or if you present two scowling faces together and you say, do these people feel the same way? Oftentimes people will say no. And if they were... if you were just decoding what was on the face, you would obviously say yes.
But is what you're saying, though, so just to clarify, from what I understand, your research has found that basically if you remove the frame of reference, those preset words.
Yes.
Entirely, just so show someone a picture, there yes. is no universality in terms of how people interpret an expression.
Not at all. And then we used a scientific method for disabling people's ability to access the meanings of words during the task, and it reduced accuracy pretty much to chance levels. We studied people with semantic dementia who've lost the ability to process language, conceptual categories. Yeah. They can distinguish a smile from all the negative expressions from neutral, but they can't really distinguish emotion. They can do what scientists call affect, which is positive, negative. And so we decided really the key test would be to go to a remote culture and to perform a set of experiments that manipulated whether or not these subjects received conceptual information in their own language. And we chose the Himba culture in northwestern Namibia because they have, first of all, they're quite isolated from Western influence, which is important. They have words in their language which are translated as the so-called basic emotion words, although we don't know when they were introduced into the language, and it doesn't appear that they use those words very often. And importantly, a team of scientists, including Paul Ekman, had published a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy, which claimed that Himba individuals, people from this culture, universally perceived emotion in vocalization. So we thought, okay, we'll go look.
So you're going visiting the same group.
Exactly, and with the same translator.
And you found that there was no universality in interpretation of emotional
Absolutely
expression.
Absolutely not. Well, these subjects, and we had several studies which we ran, and we've been twice now to Namibia. The research team was led by a colleague of mine and a graduate student from my lab. We've replicated the same findings over and over, and what we find is that these subjects can definitely tell whether a picture is or a sound, a vocalization, is depicting a positive or a negative feeling.
Okay.
But they don't perceive emotion in the way that Americans do. And when you provide them with words, so you ask them to match a face to a word, it looks more American than it did when you were just having them perceive emotion in an unconstrained way. But it still doesn't look, it still doesn't reach the threshold for what people would claim is the universal response.
So, Lisa Barrett, let me ask you, the research that you are putting forth, it's really going, it's flying in the face of a half century of other scientific research and theories. It hasn't been, you know, taken, it hasn't been accepted universally. But I guess what I'd like to get to is this question of, it seems that you're implying through your research that rather than emotion just being a pure biological process and therefore universal, that it is its expression is influenced by not only what's going on in the brain, but by culture and environment, and that so therefore, you know, people down to the individual level can express the same emotion in totally different ways.
Absolutely. That's certainly a part of the message that our data suggests. So I think it's really not a good, it's a false dichotomy to say that an emotion is cultural or it's biological, since experiences wire themselves into the brain. Culture is expressed, you know, through the actions and perceptions that we have, which are influenced by the categories we teach our kids how to interpret social interactions and so on.
So what's the implication here then?
So the implication, I think, is I'm not claiming that emotions are not biological things. I think that our evidence, for example, we have, we've done a lot of neuroimaging research. We've done statistical summaries of hundreds and hundreds of neuroimaging studies, and we don't find individual networks or brain regions for individual emotions. It's not like you have a part of your brain that triggers and then you feel angry and then your face scowls and your blood pressure goes up. That's the theory. That's the theory that's been guiding psychology and many related fields and a lot of the applied implications, as you said, for really almost half a century. And if you look in the brain, you don't see these networks. Mm-hmm. It's not that the brain is doing nothing in emotion. It's just it's a different approach to understanding both the biological and the psychological mm-hmm. nature of emotion in a way that is quite culturally sensitive.
So let me ask you this, and I know it's always a treacherous ground to ask a scientist to make any political analyses, but you know, we can't escape the fact that millions upon millions of dollars are being spent because of the presumption that that emotions are universal. I mean, is what your research hinting at that money is not being well spent? That maybe we shouldn't be training TSA agents to look for emotions at the airport.
Yeah, so one way I think to view this work is to say that Paul Ekman and all of the research that his work inspired is wrong. And that's not the view of science that we take. The view of science that we take is that the progress of science usually occurs where something that you thought was a universal truth, you discover it's actually only locally true under certain conditions. And it's not that anything that Paul found was wrong. It's only true under certain conditions. So you might say, well, no human walks around without conceptual knowledge in their minds as they're looking at faces. No TSA agent's going to walk through an airport and have language and concepts unavailable to them. And that's true. So it's not that the work is irrelevant. But if you really want to be able to read the minds and intentions and feelings of people who are not from a culture that you're from, who may have different emotion words and emotion concepts, you have to know what their vocabulary of concepts are. And if that were true, that would dramatically change how TSA agents, FBI agents, and so on are trained to detect threat.
Well, Lisa Barrett is a distinguished professor of psychology at Northeastern University. Her research is really triggering a profound and important debate in the world of emotion science. We've got links to some of her key papers at our website, radioboston.org. Professor Barrett, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.
Hope to have you back sometime soon.
Thanks very much.
Listeners, let us know what you think about the whole world of emotion science. Again, you can comment at our website, radioboston.org. But for now, stick with us, because in honor of the heat wave, we're going to have some hot summer sounds from the Boston-based band Mango Blue. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.